Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people doing the most interesting things in the worlds of innovation, business design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazlan Esau. Today we're joined by two brand new label mates who are joining the roster, as well as Josh Nixon from the Label Sessions team. So let's say a quick hello to Ed Mehmet. Ed is a commercial and futures strategist who helps large businesses surface value hidden in plain sight, and then are able to build real ventures from that. Also, welcome to Ed Parham, with nearly two decades at Space Syntax, operating at the intersection of architecture, data science, and strategic planning. Ed sees cities not as static plans, but as complex, evolving systems of behavior, infrastructure, and opportunity. So we'll jump into our sort of what's been happening this week in the world of innovation and what you need to know now. One of the things that has popped up is this idea of sort of reimagining physical spaces in 2025, right? So the high streets and malls around the world are seeing closures, heritage brands like WH Smith and sort of consolidations of banks like TSB are sort of just changing face of what the high street looks like. But we're also kind of seeing these sparks of resilience in the rest of the world. In South Africa, we're seeing brands like Checkers that have built quite a sort of cult-like fan base around their stores. We're also seeing in the UK, Currys is thriving with its tech-first approach. So what will it take to design a future where physical retail isn't just surviving, but really thriving? And how do we do our cities? How do our cities need to evolve to support that? Ed, that's probably a great question for you. Ed Parham.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think the things which have been doing well have been doing something extra as well. If you were thinking about it, why would you go to a really busy department store if you could buy the same thing online? I think there's something which is so much easier, more convenient, that you know what you want, you click on it, it gets delivered, all of those things. So I think if retail is going to really survive, then it has to offer something else at the same time. And you see that, I mean, what's interesting is if you look at different parts of London, the places which seem really busy. I was at King's Cross a few weeks ago, and there was the main space with the big shops in it was actually quite quiet. What was really, really busy was the street that was parallel to that, which had a street market that was set up for the day. Right. So there's something about the actual experience of going to places, being around other people. Maybe it's about the particular products which are you feel is the kind of things that you need to be able to touch and be close to. So there's something about this different type of thing which is being sold. I think there's things recently like redevelopment of John Lewis, where the main John Lewis on Oxford Street had a whole series of things built into it. It started to do things like cooking classes, and it has things for people to go and spend time in. These things have been changing for a while. There's a few other things. I mean, examples like Nike Town often has things going on, has events in there, or somebody DJing, or these kind of things. The Vans shop was redone fairly recently and now is able to host kind of events and stuff like this. So I think it's becoming more experiential, or it's becoming that it's things which you are going for a specific purpose that you need to actually go and see something or feel something. I mean, the other way of flipping it around is to say, what happens to those bits of city if there's more competition for certain retail, and if the kind of the big chains are being really disrupted by or have moved online? There's then a whole load of real estate in certain bits of cities, which is really, really valuable. I think the thing that we've seen through the work that we do is that certain land uses in cities need to be close to people or further away from them. Shops in London and in most cities across the UK, 80% of the shops are on the top 20% of the best connected streets. Those best connected streets get more people walking through them, so you get the footfall that supports the shops. I think the really interesting question is, what are the uses which are going to emerge over the next 10 to 20 years, which really need co-presence and need to be close to people, which are not the kind of typical retail things. And I think there's also an argument that probably in the last couple of decades, a lot of high streets and town centres have become too dominated by retail, and they've become kind of clone towns where it's the same shops in the same combinations. So and really dominated by retail. So I think there's a really interesting question actually, which is how do we then think about changing these parts of the city which are the best connected, which get more people moving through them without thinking about, and what are those opportunities?
And I think for Ed Emmett, it's probably the opposite question, right? So in terms of what are businesses thinking at this time when it comes to what my physical presence is going to look like? Any thoughts on sort of the inner workings of these big organizations?
I mean, I've definitely got some thoughts on this, but I'd just say, like, cities have a sort of paradoxical problem in the sense of they were always high dense footfall places. And now with flexible working and the post-COVID sort of bounce back to, you know, normal work patterns, like that hasn't really happened yet. Some sectors have gone for it. Like I see, you know, anyone I know who works in banking, especially American banks, they've been told, you know, eat it from the CEO. I'm in every day, you're in. Like, if you're not in, you're not part of the team. Like there'll be a consequence. And that's a really hard message to land in a post-COVID flexible workforce, you know, war for talent kind of world. So then, you know, areas like Canary Wharf, which only exists because a big banking community rolls in every day in high volume, high numbers, in high footfall. I mean, who would be Waitrose there right now, right? Like, who would be a food eatery business, you know, on a Friday there, right? Like, it just looks very, very different. So you've got that. And then the other, you know, those businesses, you know, how do they adapt? You know, how do land values and, you know, whole systems have been built on creating a rateable value for land and monetizing that per square foot. That just looks so different in that world. And then you compare it to the high street. I live in a small market town, which is typical of probably most of the UK outside of a city. And you're right, Ed, you know, like the same mix of shops kind of show up, you know, mobile phone and charity shops and then vacant lots. The issue is how those spaces get repurposed. And what would make sense is, you know, healthcare services, you know, being inside department stores and getting a, you know, a scan or going to see a dentist, you know. So I think that whole system is going to have to change, and blended use, you know, just the same building that has a, you know, dining offering, all day dining, you know, an office, you know, in the middle and then residential on top, you know, and ideally, you know, towns even getting more dense would be better, right? Because it's easier to, you know, provide that infrastructure and services. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I think the other question is, what is a store? You know, like when you're in London, a store is a brand place. You know, it's a concept place. It's a high volume footfall place. It's a meeting place, a public space. It's a place I return my physical products to safely, securely, without needing to post them. It's a community kind of meetup, you know, like it's not one thing. And I think we talk about retail as in some ways as a singular thing, but, you know, sometimes, you know, a city, I love the Rafa, you know, cafe concept store, you know, it's another brilliant way to go and immerse with a brand. The only thing that would make it better, I guess, is like if you had a connection to cyclists where they were maybe repairing bikes, or the bike store was somewhere where you would naturally want to meet up. It makes more sense for that to be on Regent's Park, you know, on the outskirts there, which, you know, you see the cyclists kind of doing their loops and their laps and stuff, or, you know, I don't know, things like that to me are quite interesting because the brand lives or dies in that space, in that arena. Yeah, sorry, garbled answer, but yeah. Super interesting.
Yeah, I agree with both of you in terms of those two points about it being more about the experience and more about the community of it. I never go anywhere unless it's for something very specialized. Otherwise, I know exactly what I'm going to find in everything, a single store I'm going to order it in. But when it comes to, you know, experiences, pop-ups, when it comes to markets, when it also comes to sort of community events that are happening within certain big stores. That's where I'm going. I'm going to take, I'm going to take my friend's kids to go and see Bluey at the mall. You know, that's the type of thing that I'm going to do. I'm not going to do that personally, but I'm sure they will. But, you know, there is that, it has to be something special to get me out of the house is the key there. Because or else I know everything else. It's all cut and paste. So it's definitely not enough of an incentive to get me to wander down.
In some ways, it seems like those kind of big, the major shopping streets and the malls are kind of in competition with each other a bit. And there's a certain amount of space and people need to be in one of those too. I'd say the places that seem to have really done well in the last few years in London tends to be the kind of smaller, more local high streets. And especially so where just around the corner from where I live, there's a high street where I think probably about 10 years ago, they set up a business improvement district. They had a rule that there wasn't allowed to be any chain stores that were going to be there. So it started a whole load of, it made space for kind of local and kind of independent shops. That's become really successful. And they now have this battle where some of the shops have got bigger and they want to open a second one. And then there's this conversation, does that mean they're now a chain and should they still be allowed to stay? And all of these kind of things, which seems a bit kind of silly, but it's happening. But the things that seem to really work are because, again, it's that thing about things which are not the kind of mass-produced things. It tends to be the stuff which is either made, it's kind of crafty or artisanal in some way. It's got a different kind of layer to it. I know there's a whole load of other questions that come into this around things like gentrification. If you can't buy coffee for like £5 or less than £5, then what does that do for the people that are living there that have been there for a long time and maybe don't have that disposable income? So there's all of those kind of difficult questions to balance out. The other thing I was thinking about was just this idea that if you are looking at things in a different way or you want to, say you're in one of the major either high streets or shopping malls and you want to stay competitive, maybe there's things to do around kind of product strategies. And maybe there are ideas around actually doing things in limited editions, not being able to buy certain things online. Again, there's going to be some balance to make against things like fast fashion and all of those other kind of issues will come into things. But I think it's this thing of working out what are the real extra things that you have to do.